It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
Start on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
His house, the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The quarter,
PJ Tucker.
Gordon by Gordon Branch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What is up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show at Locked On Rockets, and of course the blog at ClutchCityCR. Now joining us today to preview this Rockets-Lakers series is the founder of B-Ball Index himself, the numbers man, Krangis McBasketball. But you know what? We'll just call him Tim. How's it going, Tim?
I'm great, Jackson. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. I'm excited. My heart is a little exhausted from the end of that Rockets OKC series, but I'm hanging in there. And speaking of, let's really quickly, just what were your thoughts, the ending of that game, the James Harden block? How did you feel about that series? Just, the way that it came down.
Yeah, so it was one that being on the Lakers side of things, we were able to have a quick series. I started doing my preparation for the next round. I did all of my Rockets homework, was going through the film, breaking down the numbers, and then OKC came back. And I was in a position in game seven where I had an article and a video ready to launch the second the game was over if Houston won. But if OKC won, I had to start from scratch. So I was much more nervous for that game than most Laker fans were. I was really impressed with the way that Houston finished the game, especially James Harden. A key defensive play, I think, for a guy that has always struggled with, I would say, reputation among fans and analysts around the league. It's really awesome just as a basketball fan to see him have a clutch play like that. And I'm excited just to see the matchup of what him and Russ bring to the table and how much that team is invested in their style of play against a very, very different style of play team with the Lakers.
You and me both, man. I think it's going to be a definite clash of opposing styles, and it's going to be a really fun series. I think that, just basketball fans everywhere can admit that, yeah, the slander of, the Rockets losing a game seven against OKC would have been really it would have been a mountainous amount of slander, but the series between the Lakers and, possibly the Thunder would not have been anywhere near as entertaining as a series between the Rockets and Lakers. So I'm excited that we get to talk a little bit more Rockets playoff basketball, however long that may last. Now, really quickly, let's get the listeners. I want to make sure that they know kind of what you're about. So can you just tell them a little bit about B-Ball Index and kind of where your background is?
Sure. So I founded B-Ball Index, 2 years ago at this point? And our focus has really been on providing fans with data that they can use to help analyze the game. And we've been partnering with podcasts like the Locked On Podcast Network, along with different websites and blogs, just trying to get these good numbers out there and creating stats that are new stats for old concepts. We have like a passing lane defense stat or loose ball recovery rate, or different things that track the way that people enjoy talking about and seeing the game, just to help them learn a little bit and enjoy it more together. Along with that, we have a data and tools package. We have like a $5 data package. You can see all kinds of cool stuff on our site. We also have some free data pages. And then on the back end, we do consulting with agents on the NBA side and then college teams. And we're starting to work things up with international teams as well. So trying to get the public side, the private side, and just trying to help improve the game just by getting the best numbers that we can get out there. And, if you look around the analytics landscape, there are a lot of people who just don't know basketball that well, or they've got these acronyms for all these stats. You don't know what they mean. We're trying to put forth ideas and concepts that are more easily understood by everyone and just can help merge those two worlds to just so everyone can enjoy the game a little bit better.
And I will have to say, you know, after, because, you know, I was there in that meeting, you know, as you were introducing all these topics and all these different resources to the Locked On, you know, NBA crew, and I was blown away by all of it. And it's, you know, it's some really great data. I haven't been able to dive into as much of it as I've wanted to on this show. But that's definitely something that I'm going to be spending some time, especially in the off season, really going over, you know, certain, like, the player profiles are really, you know, in depth. They're really well done. I'm really excited about all that. And I will say that when we were originally, you know, in that kind of crash course meeting, kind of going over stuff, I remember seeing Ben McLemore at the bottom of a few different advanced defensive metrics lists. And so that'll come up, I'm sure, a little bit later in this preview pod. But let's just get things started, you know, for this series. I think the big question, right, on everybody's mind is, do you see the Lakers, you know, electing to continue to play big, you know, having two bigs out there on the court consistently, or is there going to be a point where you imagine them shifting AD to the five, and why?
That's a great question, and it was the biggest question for me doing my homework on this series. And first, I think it's good to set a baseline. So the Lakers in their normal rotation all year long, what they've done is they'll start games first and third quarters with JaVale McGee. They'll play big. And then to finish those quarters, they'll play small. And then the second and fourth quarters, they'll start with a stint of Dwight Howard, play big, and then they'll finish those quarters small. Usually they end up playing about 30 out of the 48 minutes big. And then the small, which I guess to Houston fans is still pretty big.
Still pretty big.
They'll
yeah.
have Anthony Davis at the five. Yeah. So that, I think, is the baseline. Going into this series, and just knowing some of Frank Vogel's background and his tendencies, I don't anticipate he's going to make a big drastic move to play small, considering the position of the Lakers entering the series as favorites, or at least in their eyes, they're definitely favorites. They feel they have a strong talent edge, and they, I think, would much rather prefer to play their own game than play small to match up with Houston. And when you think about whether or not the Lakers should go small or not, the fact that they'd be doing it in a reactive way rather than a proactive way means that they yield pretty much half the benefits they normally would, because they're not getting rim protection off the court. That's not there already. They're not really able to, like, do some of those things that when the Rockets decided to go small, it gives them that advantage over everyone. They're like that option team in college that they get to play the same game every day, but everybody else in the regular season, It's a huge curveball to play the Rockets. But in a seven-game series, I like the Lakers' abilities to adjust to defensively. And when we talk about the advantages they might have over a Rockets team, if they do continue to play big, I think on the offensive glass, that'll be a big edge. In terms of slowing down the Rockets' penetration, and this is something we could dig a little bit more into, because I found some really interesting trends when it comes to James Harden's driving tendencies when he isolates. Playing big will help them there. When it comes to owning the paint offensively and having spacing, something that we saw the Rockets do when they played the Lakers in the past was when the Lakers have four shooters out there and AD, they will try to pack the paint a bit and they'll do their scramble drill, they'll recover, and usually it worked out. But that meant that LeBron or AD in the post just really didn't have room to operate. But when the Lakers went big and they have these vertical lob threats that like OKC just didn't have. When you have JaVale McGee or Dwight Howard or Anthony Davis standing in the dunker spot on like the left side of the court and LeBron James has the ball on the right side of the court, you can't bring the help from that player, because if you do, that's an easy lob. And we saw that multiple times when the teams played in the regular season. We saw the Lakers use that against Portland last series. So almost by playing bigger and actually having the offensive players spaced a little bit less, it creates more functional spacing because the defense needs to respect those vertical lob threats of the Lakers. So it's a little counterintuitive, but I promise if you go look at the film, that is what actually ended up happening. And that also plays well into that offensive rebounding that I talked about, which is a strength for LA, is a weakness for the Rockets. And then also on the defensive end, being able to avoid situations where if you only have one big man out there and Houston manipulates where he's standing to get him on the strong side corner, he can't really help off that strong side corner to stop a driver. He's giving up a wide open corner three. So in a way, the Rockets are really smart when they isolate, not just about who is guarding James Harden. And a lot of times we focus on ball when we're watching games, but off ball, they're very purposeful about where they want your rim protection standing. And when there's only one big man out there for the defense, that's much easier to do, whether it's on ball at the top of the key or strong side corner. But when there are two bigs, and this comes out in the numbers, the Rockets were able to get that ideal setup of not having a big man in a position to help at the rim far, far less often. So if the Lakers see what I saw, I anticipate they'll stay big. I don't think they'll go any smaller than they need to, but if they need to, they have the personnel to adjust. But that is how I would anticipate to start the series.
You know, and it's such a great point that you bring up about how purposeful the Rockets are about how they set up their isolations, you know, specifically for James Harden. Anybody, you know, that watches the Rockets with any regularity knows that James Harden is very methodical in how he kind of, you know, focuses on his alignments offensively, you know, constantly coming down the court and pointing at guys, moving them in the right spots, putting them exactly where he wants them so that he can get the type of offensive isolation that he wants each and every possession down the court, which is why sometimes those Rockets offensive possessions take a little bit of time to set up if the guys aren't in the right spots and he starts, you know, he has to see where the defense is lining up first and then gets them moved into the spots that he wants them in so that he can best attack. And I'm sure that even though it's the Lakers, and that, you know, that's no slouch of a team, I'm sure that he's just excited that he doesn't have to deal with Lu Dort, you know, digging into his rib cage for an entire 48 minutes again in this series. So I'm sure he's looking forward to that. Now, coming up here in just a moment, I want to ask Tim how LA is going to be able to slow down James Harden and Russell Westbrook in this series. But first, I want to drop in a quick word from our friends over at Roman. Look, talking about ED isn't easy. Sometimes, you know, guys just brush it off. They blame themselves. They say things like they lost their mojo, or they just avoid the conversation altogether with excuses like having a long day at work or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about with a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is very easy. Just go to roman.com/lockedonmba and complete an online visit. ED used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. You can complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to roman.com/lockedonmba today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's getroman.com/lockedonmba. Getroman.com/lockedonmba. And we're back here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Be sure to check out B-Ball Index. You can check out all the great stuff that Tim is doing over there. Check them out on Twitter. Tim, can you go ahead and do me a favor? Drop that Twitter at for me.
Sure. So you can follow me on Twitter at Tim_NBA, really simple. And then my site, B-Ball Index, at the_B-Ball_Index.
All right. So as mentioned at the end of that final segment, or that first segment, I should say, wow, I need more coffee apparently. Anyways, mentioned at the end of that first segment, let's dive in. Let's figure out how, I want to see from your standpoint, how LA is going to slow down the offensive firepower of, you know, one James Harden and Russell Westbrook. Russ, who found a lot of success against LA in the two meetings that he played against them earlier this season, one of which was actually the first official game of small ball, the W that the Rockets had earlier this season back February 6th, where I think that was the 41-point outing, if I'm not mistaken. It was either the 41 or the 38, but he found a lot of success against OKC this year, and I think he is really going to be a difference maker in this series, but I want to see what your take is on how LA can slow down this dynamic guard duo.
Yeah, so I think the first step is getting the right players on the court, and if the Lakers are in a position where they have Rajon Rondo out there or Markieff Morris or J.R. Smith, those are guys that Houston can pick on all day. But when the Lakers are able to play their normal lineup, and I think by staying big, they'll be able to keep their normal rotation players out there, I feel a little bit better. I certainly don't think that the Lakers have as good of on-ball defenders as Houston saw last series. But we also saw that when Houston wants to go get their switch, they're going to go get the switches. So whether or not the best top-end Laker defender is as good as Dort, I don't know, matters a ton, because I think it's more about the weaker defenders that the Lakers will be putting on the court. And LeBron James is still a decent in the data we have, he's a good on-ball perimeter defender. Anthony Davis is someone who, among bigs, is one of the best perimeter defenders on ball. And he certainly has the length to be able to play off a little bit So you can't quite drive by him as easily, but he has the athleticism and length to contest if you do try to take a jumper. With Danny Green, you have a good on-ball defender. KCP is a weaker on-ball defender, and that's somebody that I think Houston will go to target. Kyle Kuzma is someone who I think will do well against James Harden, give him a little bit of length. Kuzma used to be a very poor defender, but he has really worked on his footwork, and he's a very good technical, I'd say a finesse defender, where he is not going to let you, you know, use dribble moves and get past him, but he's someone that you can power through. So I think Westbrook on him wouldn't be a great matchup for the Lakers, but just overall, I think LA has some decent on-ball defenders. And then the back end of this, I think, is really where the key is. And if LA is playing two bigs, what I did with my homework in this and looking at the film was I tracked every James Harden isolation possession in the bubble. So when he was scoring, when he was passing out, when he tried but then got nothing and had to reset the ball, all of those, it was over 200. And what I had found was that when the defense does have a big in a rim protecting position, so let's assume James Harden's at the right wing. He likes to iso from there. If you have your big man on ball, that doesn't count. That's not rim protection. If you have your big man in the strong side corner, that doesn't count because he's not leaving that corner three-point shooter. If you have your big man at the top of the key, that doesn't count. But if you have your big man opposite corner or opposite wing in a position where they can slide in and try to protect the rim, we didn't just see Harden's efficiency drop, but we saw him attempt to drive less. And there was a very clear tendency here on a pretty decent sample size. His willingness to drive dropped substantially. And I looked at how often he drove to score, how often he settled for a jumper, how often he needed to just pass out to a reset where there was no advantage for the offense, and then how often he was driving or just kicking to somebody who had an advantage. And if we say driving or creating an advantage for a teammate was a win for the offense, and him settling for a jumper or needing to reset the offense was a win for the defense, that win rate for the offense was about 60% of the time, just in terms of tendencies and attempts when there wasn't rim protection. But when there was somebody there, that dropped all the way down to 40%. So just by having the right players in the right positions, I think LA can deter some of that driving from Harden. And if you can deter that driving, that's really the key to the series in my eyes. And it's the key to Houston's offense, because that's what gets your players in foul trouble. That's what gets that easy offense at the line. And 77% of the scoring attempts that James Harden created for teammates were from driving in isolation rather than like dancing around and then needing to pass it out without really penetrating the defense. So if the Lakers can have good enough on-ball defense and they have the big men in the right position by playing two bigs, they should be able to limit that driving or even the attempt of driving. And that will lead to less easy offense for the rest of Houston's team. And in my eyes, you know, keep the Lakers out of foul trouble, keep Harden off the line. When we watched game seven, and this is a fun game I'll play where once I spotted this tendency, I can't unsee it. I look at when he's isolating, because as you said earlier, they'll take some time to set it up. I look at the defense from where the big men are standing. I will guess, hey, this is going to be a drive or this won't be a drive. And more often than not, you'll be correct. And when we saw game seven, I think in the second and third quarters, it almost seemed as though James Harden was less engaged or he was scoring less. He was less efficient. That was because OKC was in the right positions and he wasn't even trying to drive. But in the first quarter and then in the fourth quarter, he was able to, or it just so happened that the defenders were in the right position that played better into his tendencies, and he was able to penetrate and create offense for others. If you can stop that pipeline of easy offense, we see a team that, sure, they shoot a lot of threes, but and I think we'll talk about this in a second, but I do have some questions about what this offense can produce if you are able to cut off that pipeline of Harden drives. And I think the way you do it is by playing two bigs and by switching off ball and making sure you have a big weak side ready to step in and deter shots at the rim.
That is incredibly insightful, and it kind of it kind of feels counterintuitive to what like the eye test kind of suggests, because, you know, just watching games and not diving super deep into the numbers, one would think that James Harden is more comfortable or tends to ISO, I guess, a bit more from the left wing because that's where he can kind of, you know, get that drive going towards his strong arm at the basket. So that's really interesting that from, you know, that his ISOs tend to come, or at least in the bubble so far, have come from that right wing area, and specifically with the bigs in that certain alignment to kind of deter the drive. That is definitely something I'm going to be on the lookout for. And I appreciate you bringing that up. And
if I could, I'll say that was more for illustrative purposes. I think he isolates pretty evenly among both the wings. I don't want to, put out anything that would be misrepresenting what I saw. I think he does isolate fairly well from both wings. It's not just that right wing, but he does have a tendency to drive towards the sideline rather than towards the middle. It was another tendency I noted.
Interesting.
Regardless of which side he was on.
Now, as far as, and this is something that you briefly touched on here a moment ago, and something that is absolutely going to be, has been at the forefront of my mind, is can the Lakers actually overcome this Rockets math advantage, you know, as they're only shooting about, you know, 33s a game, whereas the Rockets are averaging over 50 a game now. And this has been the tendency for the Rockets for a long time now, is just burying their opponents under an avalanche of 3-point shooting. And it's not necessarily, you know, good 3-point shooting. It's just volume over quality. And, you know, so far, all throughout the OKC series, the Rockets had the math advantage. They were a plus from behind the 3-point line, I think, in every single game. And, you know, that's definitely something that I think plays into the Rockets' favor in this series. But how do you view that?
Yeah, so that's another interesting one, because you talk about volume versus quality. When we look at the Rockets as a team, I believe they're 24th as a team in 3-point percentage. When we look at, and we have some advanced metrics that we use over at the site that you can find on the player profiles or in our leaderboards tool, that look at 3-point shot quality in terms of how open you are, how far out the shots are that you're taking, whether they're catching and shooting or pulling up. I'm probably forgetting other things on the fly, but there's a bunch that goes into that. And we actually found that among the nine rotation players for Houston. Among those nine players, 5 of those nine guys are in the top 10-ish percent among all NBA players in terms of their 3-point shot quality. They're putting up the 24th best percentage as a team, despite having lots of their role players getting some of the easiest shots. And actually, PJ Tucker is first place on that 3-point shot quality list, and James Harden is dead last in that 3-point shot quality list.
That matches the eye test.
Yeah, and it's crazy because on the regular season, or I think up to this point, PJ Tucker's 3-point percentage was just like slightly better than James Harden's, which is just bonkers, because first place and last place, they could not be taking different shots, yet their percentage itself is pretty similar. So then we on top of that 3-point shot quality metric, we have a 3-point shot making metric, which looks at your performance and compares it with the quality to say, hey, PJ Tucker, he gets really, really easy shots and he's still only shooting 35%. He's not that good of a 3-point shooter. Russell Westbrook, he has an F in this metric. Eric Gordon actually has an F in this metric. Harden, McLemore, and Covington have A's. Actually, Covington has an A-, but those are the three guys for Houston that are really good shot makers. Everybody else on that roster is, Jeff Green's a C+, Rivers is a C, House is a C-, Tucker's a D+, Gordon and Westbrook are Fs. If you can lower the shot quality for, let's see, Rivers was an A- in quality, House an A in quality, Tucker the best in quality, Westbrook the 96th percentile in quality, McLemore A- in quality. If you can cut off that driving in that easy offense, that should result in the already questionable 3-point shooting percentage that we see and drop it even further, just because Houston doesn't have those elite shot makers. And they, game by game, they can go off or they can have a poor game. But I feel strongly that over a 7-game series, if LA can slow down those drives and cut off that pipeline of easy offense, we'll really start to see the wheels fall off and start seeing some bricks being laid. If Houston just needs to have guys create their own offense or be taking harder threes than they're already taking.
You know, that's so wonderful to hear, because one, it absolutely matches the eye test. The Rockets feel like they generate, and it's not even feel, it's, you know, I've looked at these numbers throughout the season, is they generate, you know, some of the most wide open 3-point shots in the entire association. They, you know, just the gravity that James Harden and Russell Westbrook provide, and the spacing since committing fully to small ball and shipping Clint Capella out, you know, that 5-out spacing generates a lot of wide open looks. They just don't have the greatest shooters to hit those shots. And even though PJ Tucker is known as the, you know, the 3-point shooting corner king, there's way too often, too many times where it's just, it feels like he gets these, you know, start just way too wide open looks and cannot convert on them. And I always wonder what this team would look like to really have a dead eye shooter, which surprisingly Ben McLemore has been that for this team throughout this season, having a, you know, a career resurgence here in Houston, which has been great to see. And I genuinely think that he will be a key part in this Lakers series, because against OKC, it wasn't that he was unplayable necessarily, but, you know, because I think it's a bit overstated how poor his defense is. It was definitely really rough around the edges before the bubble, but it feels like he's stepped up a bit defensively since getting into the bubble. And I think he's going to be a difference maker potentially for this Rockets team in this best of seven series against the Lakers, you know, being able to continue to space the floor and be that reliable 3-point threat alongside Robert Covington and James Harden as the actual good shooters on the team. Now, coming up, I want to continue this conversation. I think we're getting some really good thoughts out of Tim here. And, you know, we're going to keep previewing this Rockets-Lakers series and all the different topics that we want to still touch base on, like what some of the Lakers' win conditions are, talking about the Houston Rockets switch everything defense. And we'll get there in just one moment after a quick word from our friends over at Built Bar. When's the last time you had a protein bar that you actually enjoyed eating? You can change that. If your answer was never, you can change that, and you can try out Built Bar right now and actually have a protein bar that basically tastes like a candy bar. Look, the bars are 100% covered in chocolate. They're soft. They're easy to chew. They're delicious. They are great for the health conscious person, whether you're trying to lose or even just maintain weight. They're low cal, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. Absolutely primo for a keto diet. A lot of these bars, you know, have anywhere from 17 to 20 grams of protein in each bar. They are phenomenal. They've got flavors like cookies and cream, apple almond crisp, banana bread, mint chocolate brownie, my personal favorite, the double chocolate mousse. You cannot go wrong with it. And you can check it out right now. Just go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off. That's 10 bucks off your very next order. So use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at builtbar.com. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for all things Houston Rockets basketball. And we are now previewing this Rockets-Lakers second round series. And the next topic I want to jump into is, you know, we've kind of hit on the Rockets offense quite a bit, talking about Russ and Harden and then the 3-point shooting. But I want to know, defensively, how effective are you expecting the Lakers to be, Tim, at using, you know, at slipping to take advantage? Because, you know, if you haven't heard it by now, the best way to take advantage of a switching defense is by slipping screens. And so how good do you think the Lakers are going to be at taking advantage of Houston's switch everything defense here in this series?
That's a great question. This is something that the Lakers have not been good at this year. They have, over the entire season as a team, and specifically in the LeBron Anthony Davis pick and roll, looking at the second spectrum data, which I had provided by a source, they just are not good at that. And they can be so dominant when you drop or when you hard hedge or try to blitz them. But when teams are switching, it just goes away. That advantage goes away. So when I was doing my work to prepare for the series, that was a huge concern of mine. As was, hey, if we do play small, we get that rim protection out of there, some of these like good but not great, you know, perimeter defenders are going to get blown by Harden. But that switching is something that really concerned me until I started looking at the film. And I will say that Portland, in a way, prepared the Lakers well for this, because where Portland didn't quite switch as much, but the Lakers had to face a similar situation where they would pack the paint against isolations or post-ups. And I think that and the switching are the two things that the Lakers will need to overcome to win this series. And with both of them, one area that LA has an advantage in this specific matchup that they don't necessarily have against other teams is just the air superiority of having lob threats like JaVale McGee, Dwight Howard, and Anthony Davis. We saw when these two teams played earlier in the season, the Lakers were able to use those slips pretty effectively. And I mean, Houston has done a really good job this year defending role men. They have the highest they've forced the highest turnover rate among any team for pick and roll role man possessions since they've went to small ball. But it's hard to force turnovers when the shot is going through the net before the shooter's feet hit the ground. When they're throwing those lobs out there, there's just really not all that much that PJ Tucker or Robert Covington or any of these guys can do. So getting in front of those slippers, when that pick and roll happens, instead of letting Anthony Davis or whoever it might be get behind the defense, that is going to be a key. You need to bump them. You need to get in their way, because if they have that rhythm, and if they get that free release, it's going to be lob city all day. And if not, it's going to be a collapsing Houston defense. And then LeBron James or even Alex Caruso, they're able to make these reads and kick that ball out to the weak side corner if you do decide to tag that role man. So I think trying to slow down those lobs will be really critical. Something that the Lakers had done to try to get these working a bit better were they would run these on an empty side where there's no man in the corner. So there's a less of a likelihood that slip man will have somebody run over and try to tag them. They've run it where LeBron will be standing in the corner because Houston didn't want to leave him at all. So effectively that's an empty corner. So there's no tag man. Both of those worked. The Lakers ran butt screens. That's what you call the ball screens, where instead of going to the side of the defender, you go right behind him. And this guarantees, again, that the screener will be able to get that inside position in between the Houston defender and the basket. So for Houston, whether individually or as a team, they need to find ways to be able to bump or get these lob men off their rhythm, off their path to the basket, and really just hope that the refs aren't calling those fouls. Because if they don't do that, it's really hard for me to find a way that, like they're not going to get taller in the next 24 hours. So figuring out how to slow down those lobs, I think it turns what was a weakness for LA on the season into a strength in the specific matchup, just because they don't have to be as creative just due to their size and again, air superiority, just like with war, that can be a game changer.
You know, I think one of the interesting adjustments that we saw in the Rockets Thunder series is that they, specifically Chris Paul, down the stretch of games was targeting Robert Covington. And that was kind of a twofold thing where Covington is not the best on-ball perimeter defender. And we saw multiple occasions where Dennis Schroeder, Chris Paul, even SGA were able to, you know, drive pretty much right by him with almost, relative ease. And I think that was a two-part thing, not only because it was effective for them to drive by him, but also because it takes him away from what he excels at, which is being a help side defender, coming over from the weak side and, you know, being that, you know, long, you know, being that lengthy defender, kind of clogging up passing lanes, being able to rotate over. And he has really good defensive IQ, especially when he's off ball. And so do you potentially see the Lakers utilizing something like that, like optimizing their offense to where they're getting Robert Covington away from the action? Because he, to me, is probably the guy that is best suited to kind of break up some of those lob threats and be kind of that wrench in the Lakers' offensive game plan if they're going to be trying to slip those screens.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I would think that LA would be more focused on targeting the whoever the weakest on-ball or ball screen defenders are, which we're redoing our perimeter defensive talent grade right now. And it's not quite finished, but I have the preliminary results in front of me. And the weakest on-ball defenders for Houston by this right now are Ben McLemore, Robert Covington, and Austin Rivers. Rivers actually being at the bottom, then McLemore, then Covington. The weakest ball screen ball handler defender has been Covington. So naturally, he is somebody that you would want to target, regardless of his abilities playing passing lanes. But just like you said, he is one of those guys that, I mean, usually it's breaking up bounce passes or those little dump offs, but the lobs will be harder to do so just because they're so high in the air. But he is one of those, another sturdy guy with good hands that I don't know if he'll be able to break up those passes, but if he's able to disrupt the path for those Laker players in getting to the rim, they can have success. If LA didn't have lob threats and it were Steven Adams and Danilo Gallinari, I would feel much better as a Houston fan about that passing lane defense and the ability to break up those dump offs, but there's not all that much you can do when the passes are going to be so high in the air. It's really about getting in that path, maybe draw some charges, just bump that guy. So yes and no to your question, but either way, I think Robert Covington will be one of the couple players that the Lakers specifically target to go at if they do decide to start picking matchups and go after people.
So looking kind of at the series, what specifically do you view as kind of the win conditions, or if there's one specific win condition that the Lakers need to go out of their way to try and achieve, what do you kind of view as the most important thing for them headed into this series?
For me, it's more on the coaching side. And if they open up game one going small, I'm going to be pretty upset. The offensive rebounding advantage that the Lakers can have, where we saw them get an extra dozen possessions a game against Portland, and they're 2 7-footers, they should be able to do even better than that against Houston. If they give up that advantage by playing smaller, that will irk me. By playing one big instead of two bigs, like we mentioned earlier, they won't be able to be as resistant to how purposeful Houston is at getting those big men, those rim protectors, in positions where they can't help on drives. So it hurts your defense. And then offensively, not having those lob threats pretty much puts the Lakers back in the position where, hey, we suck at attacking switches, and we have all year. If you don't have those lob threats and you don't have that trump card, that goes away. And your spacing on AD and LeBron post-ups is terrible when you don't have those lob threats that require these Houston players to get into their bodies. Because if Houston were taller, if you have Hassan Whiteside out there, he can play a little bit off of them and help over a little and try to recover by jumping. But with Houston, they really need to stay into the body of those lob threats in order to negate them. So that has created spacing for the Lakers, and I'm assuming it will moving forward. So if the Lakers do decide to play small, that's negated. And then suddenly LeBron and AD look horrible when they isolate, which we saw in round one. The Lakers, when they had a packed paint, were terrible. They were scoring like 0.5 points per possession. AD and LeBron looked like middle schoolers. But when they were able to open up the paint, they were scoring at will. We saw the same thing in the Houston tape. I separated the clips I was looking at between, hey, packed paint versus a small lineup, open paint versus a big lineup, and there was a stark contrast in the efficiency. So if I am a Rockets fan, I am crossing my fingers and hoping that the Lakers decide that they really do need to play small and they start giving up those advantages on the boards in having rim protection against Harden. Because again, like we said, that is really the first domino that results in those high shot quality, all those different things. And then also allowing Houston to clog the paint up a little bit more. I think that's the key for me. And then also you would love for KCP or Danny Green to get the yips on their three-pointers again. LA has some great three-point shooters. They have been pretty streaky this year. And especially in the bubble, and we've seen, I mean, Laker fans have, I think, bullied almost every player on the Lakers this year, just on Twitter.
As is tradition.
And they've oh my goodness. This Laker fan base, it's amazing to have such a group of people that can be so enthusiastic about their team. But as an opposing fan base or as a player of the team, it can turn toxic quick. So we've seen these guys, when they don't perform, it starts to even go downhill a little bit more because the Laker fans really get at them. And with these guys in the bubble not really having friends, now some of them have their families around, we've seen that kind of get into players' heads a bit. So if the shooting goes off, that enables Houston to pack the paint a bit more. But really, for me, the key is whether or not the Lakers go big or small.
You know, and it's funny you say that. Look, I mean, just a few days ago, my name on Twitter was temporarily Eric Gordon's number one bully. So, you know, I stand by it. Bullying works, you know, by you know, talking about what a player's doing wrong and highlighting all their mistakes. I feel like, you know, maybe they jump on Twitter late at night and they see everybody bashing them and they're like, man, I really got to clean this up. No, not really. But legitimately, you know, I think every fan base is that way a little bit, you know, at times, especially when, you know, players are having a, we'll say just a frustrating go of it, to put it lightly, at times. Mm-hmm. Now, really quickly, last couple questions here, just in general. And I mean, we've talked, you know, you've mentioned a couple kind of spots here and there, but just what weakness, if any, like kind of just basically the one kind of trouble spot, the Achilles heel of this Lakers team is there that Houston can take advantage of in this series?
I would say three different things, and I'll be brief with each of them. So I think we talked about the depth a bit earlier. If you can get Markieff Morris, Rajon Rondo, J.R. Smith playing out in the game, that will be an issue. If the Lakers play small and that rim protection's gone, I am really, really happy as a Rockets fan and as a Rockets coaching staff. That's the second thing. If you can get Kyle Kuzma on Russell Westbrook or be attacking KCP, I think that's an advantage. And then actually, from a coaching standpoint, Frank Vogel and his staff are excellent at making defensive adjustments, but they have been quite slow at making offensive adjustments. So if Houston gets to the point where they need to start being creative or doing different things, LA can play the tactics game on the defensive end of the court, but offensively, even against Portland, they went two or three games without making little adjustments that left me scratching my head. And they were still able to out-talent that team. But in this series, if things aren't going their way and they aren't able to make those adjustments, I start to worry as a Laker fan. So I would, if I'm Houston, certainly challenge LA. We've seen Nick Nurse has been excellent at this. Throw out a triangle in two, or throw out a box in one, or start just doing different creative things. If it doesn't work after three possessions, you stop doing it. But if it does work and you have an advantage for an elongated period of time, fantastic. You're just finding free points. So little challenges here or there, toying with things for a couple possessions. It doesn't need to be a triangle in two. It doesn't need to be the amoeba defense, but finding little ways to force LA offensively to need to make adjustments and play that chess game is into the Rockets' favor, because we have not seen Frank Vogel this year or in previous years be nearly as strong in that regard as they have been on the defensive side of the court.
Well, that sounds promising. I don't know if I have a lot of faith in the Rockets coaching staff to make those in-game adjustments, because I think that's one area that we've seen time and time again where MDA's in-game adjustments leave something to be desired at times. You mentioned very early on talking about Harden's reputation. I mean, MDA has a reputation as an offensive-minded coach for a reason. Elston Turner has done wonders with this Rockets defense taking over, in the absence of Jeff Bezelic, continuing on the switch everything philosophy. But at the same time, I'm not exactly hopeful or going to hold my breath at them doing anything, super experimental defensively. I'm expecting, the same old from them, and just kind of, if it ain't broke, don't fix it type philosophy out of them. But last question before we get you out of here, Tim, just kind of looking at this Rockets team, who do you think, and I feel like a lot of fan bases feel this way, where you look at another organization, you think, you know what, I hate it when that bum at the end of the bench goes off against my team or whatever. And so just which Rockets player, which of the role players on the Rockets are you kind of looking at thinking, this guy could have a really sneaky good series against the Lakers?
Mm-hmm. The one guy who stands out when I think about, okay, if the series goes well, they're not going to be able to get that penetration, they won't get the easy threes. One of the players who should be pretty resilient to that will be Robert Covington, who is already shooting at a shot quality on his threes worse than 97% of players, yet has a three-point shot making graded better than 86% of players. Him and Ben McLemore are the two non-James Harden guys that shoot very well. As you said, we've seen better defense from McLemore once he's gotten into the bubble. We saw, and I was DMing you about this earlier today, I think it was D'Antoni said that they would look at expanding the rotation a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that might mean more McLemore. That is an X factor guy for me. I think Austin Rivers might be another one, because he is in our 3-point data, he's a decent 3-point shooter. He's one of the only guys that in our getting to the rim metric actually does pretty well. And he's one of the only guys on the team that has half decent playmaking talent data. This is a Rockets roster that I love the concepts they're going for. And I think there's a future for this approach in the NBA. They have a lot of guys who are very siloed in their skill sets, where they're good at one thing, or they're good at like one and a half things.
There's some very, some very one dimensional players, and absolutely. I don't mean to cut you off. It's something that I've harped on before, in that, I've mentioned before that, back with like the 7 seconds or less Suns, with NBA's first iteration of what this brand of basketball could look like, it felt like there were more players on that roster that were capable of a diverse, you know, array of, you know, offensive capability. They weren't these one-dimensional style players. And meanwhile, they're trying to replicate that with this new Rockets small ball squad. But it feels like, again, they're stuck with a lot of players that, you know, like the PJ Tuckers, the Robert Covingtons, who can't really handle the basketball well. They're very much these 3-and-D type guys with not much else going for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you. That's, as I go through our player profiles and the talent data, it's really a struggle to find a player who's like good at like three things. It's everybody's really good at like one or maybe one and a half things. And Austin Rivers is one of the few guys who shines in more than one area. So I think there's potential there with him. If the Lakers play small and Houston's able to pack the paint a little bit, or if the Lakers shooters aren't hitting threes and Houston's able to pack the paint a bit, that enables them to play some of their worst defenders a little bit more. And that might mean more Austin Rivers. And if so, he adds a boost from a playmaking standpoint. He adds a boost from he can at least attack a closeout and maybe collapse a defense and be a secondary creator to find open shots. And he at least has some decent 3-point shot making data. So he'll be less susceptible to, if he's getting worse shots, he's not just going to fall off a cliff in terms of his 3-point percentage. So I see potential there. I see potential with Covington and McLemore. It's hard to pick one guy because they're all kind of, it's very much throw a dart at a dartboard, because I think any of the three of them, depending on how things go, could have a great series or could be pigeonholed into doing things that they're not used to doing and then look really poor. But I think those are the three guys that, and if I had to pick one, I guess I'll say Covington, but those are the three guys that I will be watching closely to see how they play and how the Lakers defend them.
All right. Well, with that, the moment has come, the time of truth. I need your prediction for the series.
So I'm of the belief that if the Lakers play big, they have a talent advantage. They have that vertical lob threat trump card over the switching. They have two elite scorers. And if they play big, they'll be able to unpack the paint a little bit. So I can see a lot in LA's favor, a lot more than I initially assumed. And I had made a lot of assumptions about, okay, LA might need to play small. But after digging into the info, that's not where I am anymore. With all of that said, I am of the belief that the Lakers should win in five games. I struggle to see enough things going the wrong way where the Lakers would lose. But that said, if James Harden is able to get into the rim and put up points and get guys in foul trouble, Dwight Howard is a guy who, in our foul trouble percentage metric, which looks at how often you're playing with either two or more fouls in the first quarter, three or more fouls in the second or third quarters, I believe. Three or more in the second, four more in the third or fourth, and then five fouls in overtime. Dwight Howard is in foul trouble all the time. So that's someone that might be able to be taken out of the game. And if Houston is able to play their game or can force LA to go small with them, I can see with the guns these guys have, with Westbrook and Harden, being able to pull out a couple victories. But I'll stick with Lakers in five.
All right. I appreciate the confidence right out of the gate, and the fact that it's backed up not just by, you know, feel for the game, that it's backed up by numbers and stats. And that's one of the best things about, you know, having guys out there doing the work that you do, trying to provide context to all of this and really backing up these data-driven arguments. With that, I'm going to humbly say Rockets in seven. This is a Rockets podcast, and I am feeling overly confident after the end of that Oklahoma City series. So I'm going Rockets in seven. I think that there is still a talent gap there between these two teams, but I'm feeling on top of the world, and that cannot be taken away from me. So with that, though, one more time, Mr. McBasketball, can you let our listeners know where they can check out all your content at?
Yeah, of course. So you can follow me on Twitter at Tim_MBA. You can follow my site at the_bball_index, or just Google Krandjus McBasketball. I'll be the first thing that pops up, or B-ball index. It'll be the first thing that pops up. When you go to that site, you'll be able to find some of our free data. If you subscribe to our $5 a month data and tools package, you'll have access to player profiles with hundreds of stats on every single guy in the NBA. Our leaderboards tools will let you query guys and say, hey, I don't know, who are the shooting guards that play the point of attack defensively that have played at least 600 minutes and have a finishing at rim rating that's at least a B, or I don't know, whatever random combination of things you want to look at. Just invaluable tools. If you go to our site, you can see demos and previews of everything that's included there. If you do check out the site, you can see my, I wrote, I think, 6,500 words previewing the series, and it is not going to be the, hey man, I think the Lakers are just too talented. I literally broke down all of the tactics and that side of the game, all the X's and O's. Here are the plays that Houston runs most often. Here are the diagrams for those plays. Here's some video on those plays. Here's what I would do to adjust. And here are the likely counters that they will have. Things like that. Or you, like you said, using that data, intersecting it with the X's and O's, trying to analyze the game as objectively and using the same skill set and the same stuff that I used to do at the D1 level, and the same thing that we do now when we consult with teams when it comes to scouting players and trying to provide that front office quality product, but out to everybody for free. So you can see my article over at B-Ball Index. I just put out two videos also on the series, I think totaling 20 minutes. One of them was around why the Lakers should play big. And then one of them was around how the Lakers will likely attack Houston. And in both of those, lots of film work, tons of possessions that I was watching film for and logging my own manual stats. I think you'll learn some things about James Harden's isolation tendencies. You can see some of those numbers backing up what I was sharing today. So as a Lakers fan or a Rockets fan, and of course, you know, if you scroll all the way down to the bottom, it says Lakers will win in five. But if you ignore the bottom and you ignore the headline, all the content in the middle, I think will be educational in at least some capacity.
You know, as you were kind of explaining that just now, I kind of had this moment where I just realized, you know, it sounds like you're exactly what Scout with Brian wishes he was. And so just kudos to you, man. I appreciate all the work you're putting in over there. It's very educational. I've enjoyed, you know, the brief dives that I've taken into all the work that you guys put out over there. So phenomenal job. Definitely be sure to check that out. And I really appreciate you taking the time to be here and record this with me today.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me. And I'll have to pass you some interesting stats I find just to help get the ball rolling so you guys can see what these player profiles have to offer. I'll see if I can pass some of those along to you in between the series.
Absolutely, man. Now, I think for today's show, that's where we're going to wrap things up. So as always, thank you so much for listening. And we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.